listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ages Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program. I'm going to begin with an article from the Point of View section of the November issue of Share International magazine. The title is Humanity's Greatest Challenge, Coming Together to Fight the Climate Emergency. It's by John Pfeffer, and John is the author of a dystopian novel called Splinterlands, as well as the director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. There's nothing like a climate crisis to make everyone realize that they are living on the same planet. Wars, even international conflicts, are generally confined to one region. Economic downturns are sometimes so confined within national borders that they don't even affect neighbours. Consider North Korea's arduous march of the 1990s and its lack of impact on South Korea's economy. It used to be that climate-related disasters followed the same rule, and people who lived in safe, temperate zones would look with a mixture of pity and compassion at those who were suffering through distant storms. Now, even though the impacts are different, almost everyone is seeing the consequences of this climate crisis. Even though it is not yet over, 2022 has been a record year of climate-related suffering. In the United States, Hurricane Ian has caused some of the strongest storm surges in the history of Florida, with the water rising as much as 2 feet along the state's western coast. It comes on the heels of Hurricane Fiona, which devastated the Caribbean and Canada. In Asia, Typhoon Hinnamnor caused extensive flooding in South Korea. Typhoon Nanmadol prompted the evacuation of 9 million people in Japan. And Typhoon Noru has brought devastation to Vietnam and the Philippines. Unprecedented monsoon rains late this summer put one-third of Pakistan underwater. Europe experienced a record year for wildfires, with the destruction of 660,000 hectares of land. In July alone, a blistering heatwave led to 53,000 excess deaths. Drought has brought high levels of malnutrition to East Africa, while elsewhere on the continent, severe flooding has affected South Sudan, Nigeria, Republic of Congo, DRC, and Burundi. In Latin America, glaciers are melting in the Andes. Chile is enduring a 13-year mega-drought, and deforestation of the Amazon has happened at a record pace in the first 6 months of 2022. Meanwhile, the smaller islands of the Indian and Pacific Oceans are getting smaller every day. Last year, an intergovernmental panel on climate change study concluded that 85% of the world's population had been affected by climate change. This year, the IPCC estimated that 40% of the world's population is highly vulnerable to climate change. Highly vulnerable means different things in different places. Some people are inundated by water, while others can't get enough of it. Wildfires are destroying houses and lives in one part of the world, while hurricanes are having the same effect in another part. However different these natural disasters might be, they are made many times worse by a single factor: the increasing amount of carbon in the atmosphere. Responses to those disasters have also been varied. Richer countries are able to deal with catastrophes more rapidly and effectively than poorer countries. Money can't stop hurricanes or typhoons, but it can certainly help protect more people from these disasters and clean up from the damage more quickly. Despite these differences, climate change is uniting us in planet-wide suffering. It should have the same kind of uniting effect that COVID-19 had in mobilising resources, scientific research and humanitarian efforts to treat the pandemic and find a cure. But that's not what has happened with the climate crisis. Sure, countries came together in Paris in 2015 to make pledges to cut their carbon emissions. Most countries subsequently agreed to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050. This superficial consensus masks some profoundly different approaches. The most important difference is between the richer countries of the global north and the poorer ones of the global south. In 2009, the rich countries pledged to transfer $100 billion a year to the developing world to help it transition to a clean energy future. The richer countries promised to reach that goal by 2020. They didn't. At best, they reached $80 billion in 2019. And that number has been inflated with the inclusion of non-climate-related development assistance, as well as market-rate loans, which only add to the overall debt burden of the poorer countries. Even this $100 billion figure, moreover, is wildly inadequate to the task. The G7, for instance, recognises that the bill for clean energy infrastructure for the developing world will come to at least $1 trillion a year. Meanwhile, the richer countries are either investing billions and billions into their own clean energy transition, the United States, the European Union, China, or they aren't doing anything at all, like Russia. What isn't happening is a concerted effort to all work together to address the climate emergency. Perhaps you are thinking, okay, but where is all this money supposed to come from? Trillions of dollars is a lot of money. And didn't we just spend a lot of money to deal with COVID? Climate justice activist Tom Athanasiou points to a number of sources of money. First, government subsidies to support fossil fuel extraction and production, as well as other environmentally destructive activities, total at least $1.8 trillion a year. Military spending has gone above $2 trillion a year. Taxing the world's rich could raise over $2.5 trillion a year. And, of course, the poorest countries are paying a lot of interest on their existing foreign debt of over $11 trillion. There are many reasons why the global north should transfer this money to the global south so that it can leapfrog over today's polluting technologies. First of all, the climate crisis is happening because of the carbon emissions of the richest countries, which are responsible for roughly half of all emissions since 1850 and a quarter of all emissions since 1990. The countries suffering the most from climate-related disasters, like Pakistan and Ethiopia, contributed only a minuscule amount to the problem. Second, the Global North's carbon neutrality pledges, however ambitious, depend on outsourcing carbon-intensive industry and agriculture to the developing world. This is a large loophole in the Green New Deals of the richest countries. Paying climate reparations to the South helps to close that loophole. The climate crisis is the greatest collective challenge that humanity has faced since it started walking on two legs. The only viable response to this challenge is an equitable one that requires the richest countries to join hands with the poorest. The planet is testing us. Intelligence and the application of technology are a necessary but insufficient answer to this test. Only compassion and cooperation will lead us out of the dead end of fossil fuels and overconsumption. And that article was sourced from commondreams.org and was originally published in the Hankyoray, I better spell that, I guess, Hankyoreh. And now on to a compilation published in the same issue titled Meditation and the Soul. So I'll read out a few of the quotes that were included. We won't have time for all of them. The first is a question. Why is meditation so important? The reply from Benjamin Creme reads as follows. The soul is the reality, not the man or woman. The physical plane is real from its own angle, but from the angle of the soul, it is not real. It is relative. Our problem is that we take it as the whole, while it is only a relative part of a much greater whole. The part cannot see the whole, but the whole sees the part and the different parts. From the point of view of the soul, its effort in incarnating again and again is to create a series of bodies which will gradually build this bridge and unify what was fragmented. The involutionary process into matter is reversed, and the spiritualizing of matter takes place. We spiritualize matter through our own bodies. The soul creates a series of bodies, each incarnation at a higher turn of the spiral, a higher vibrational rate, if all goes well, until we have a body through which the soul can express itself without too much limitation, and eventually without any limitation. Meditation is the process which sets this in motion. That is why in every religion and training, at the basis of all paths of ascent, is meditation of one kind or another. It may not be transmission meditation or the various meditations you have come to know or read about, but some form of meditation and alignment with the soul and its nature must take place because it is the soul who has incarnated. The soul cannot be avoided or bypassed. The soul is the reality. That reality has to be recognized. And the method by which it is recognized is through the creating of the bridge, the path of return. That quote's from Benjamin Creme's book, Maitreya's Mission, Volume 3. And this next quote's from Benjamin Creme's master, and the title of the article was The Path of Ascent. Heretofore, our knowledge of the soul has come from religious texts. These have left man with the impression that the soul is distant from himself, something to be recognized and worshipped from afar. As man progresses, however, he comes to understand that the soul is himself, a higher and purer part of himself, but nevertheless himself. Thus a man progresses, deepening in knowledge of his true being and purpose. Today, thousands of people are consciously aware of making such a journey. For them, life is deepening in meaning, and they search for greater knowledge and experience. Thus, in time, they turn to meditation, and through this practice, a great discovery is theirs. Step by step, they know for certain that they are souls, that the soul is not some distant idea, but their very being. Gradually, the tempo of their lives changes, and a deeper meaning and purpose consolidates all that they do. Thus do men advance on the journey to perfection, reflecting more and more the divinity and wisdom of the soul. I should mention in any of these articles by Benjamin Krim's master where men are mentioned, he, of course, is referring to both men and women. It is just part of the way that the articles are written. On to the next quote, and this one again is from Benjamin Krim from the book Transmission, A Meditation for the New Age. Meditation provides a more or less scientific means, depending on the meditation, of contacting the soul and gradually becoming at one with the soul, so that it can manifest clearly and potently on the physical plane. When we see such individuals, we perceive them as radiating meaning and purpose. For example, exceptionally creative artists, scientists, politicians, or educators. Such persons are quite obviously governed by a force altogether different from the norm. It is the energy of the soul which is pouring through them, making them the creative beings who enrich our culture and civilization. Transmission meditation is the simplest method I know to accomplish this soul contact. Many meditations require that the individual master a powerful, concentrated mental activity, which is more than most people can do. What people call meditation is often not meditation, but simply concentration, or even just reverie. There are five stages of meditation, each one leading gradually to the next. Concentration, meditation, contemplation, illumination, and inspiration. And this quote from Maitreya, from the book Maitreya's Teachings, The Laws of Life. No one can lead you. You are born to be aware of yourself, to know the master in yourself. Your inner space is sacred. It is where all things, all problems dissolve. It is where you go when you tell others you are tired and frightened and fed up, when you want to be left alone to find your own space. You have been given that space so that the confusion and chaos around you will dissolve. You must never surrender that space to anyone except your true self. Meditation is really a journey back to that space to find peace and happiness. And here's a quote again from Benjamin Krim's master, this time from the article Evolution versus Creationism. Darwin, and those who correctly followed his thought, describes only the outer physical development of man, largely ignoring that we are all engaged in the development of consciousness. The human body has all but reached its completeness. There remains little further to be achieved. From the standpoint of consciousness, however, man has scarcely taken the first steps towards a flowering, which will prove that man is indeed divine, a soul in incarnation. One day, the fact of the soul will be proved by science and so become generally accepted, and the old dichotomy will be healed. And this quote, again from Benjamin Krim, from the book The Reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of Wisdom. The true purpose of meditation is to bring you into contact and alignment with your soul. Through meditation, you build a bridge, a channel of light, between the physical brain and your own soul. The Sanskrit term for it is the antakarana. Through the antakarana, the energy of the soul pours down into its vehicle. Meditation is to do with the gradual soul infusing of the individual. You become gradually infused with the energy of your soul, that is the energy of the purpose, the love quality, the intelligence aspect of the soul. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you can tune in next time. Wishing you all a lovely week.